WPFW, Washington.
Good evening and welcome to the Ruckus Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and June. Mark, Terry, and Garland, three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again, live with Terry, Mark, and Garland, and the Ruckus Caucus.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Ruckus Caucus. We are reporting live from Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street. This is Mark Levine sitting here with
Terry D. Kester
and
Garland Nixon.
And we've got a very, very special show for you tonight with a very special guest. In fact, he is a former special agent, an undercover agent with the FBI.
Former.
It's okay, Terry. He can't get you now.
What do you mean former undercover? He's actually watching you tonight, Mark.
That's true. He's actually sitting here watching us tonight. Yeah. His name is Mike German, and he worked in the FBI from 1988 to 2004, and he worked undercover. He infiltrated a number of white supremacist organizations, and as far as I'm concerned, he's a real American hero.
I tried that, Mark, but it never worked.
It never worked for you.
They kept picking me out.
I don't know why it didn't work for you. stopped a number of planned firebombings of black churches in Los Angeles in the 1990s, and he came to my attention a few years after, actually right after I started radio, when he discovered a connection.
You started radio? I could have sworn that
when
was
I
way...
started going on radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just checking a little science there.
He discovered a connection between white supremacists and Islamic extremists, and actually the FBI covering it up, leading Mike German to expose the cover-up, leave the FBI, and currently he is a senior policy analyst with the ACLU.
Oh, in that case, I did do it.
Exactly. Mike German, welcome to the Ruckus Caucus.
Thanks for having
me.
Like I said, I consider you a real American hero, and to me, you're the perfect person to address what I find is a very difficult issue. It makes my head spin, because all you have to do is look at your work, infiltrating white supremacist organizations, stopping terrorist attacks, to recognize that sometimes government surveillance is a good thing. And yet, all you have to do is look at the excesses of the Bush administration and what you do at the ACLU to recognize, and frankly, what J. Edgar Hoover did with Martin Luther King, to recognize that sometimes government surveillance can be way, way beyond the pale.
Oh, wait, let's do this. Let's invite people to come on down.
Still meet Agent Mike German, and you can ask him a question if you think the government's spying on you or you're worried about it or you just want to know what's legal and what's not legal. Absolutely, Garland. Come on down to Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street. There are plenty of seats available. Right next to Ben's Chili Bowl, and you can ask Mike German, whatever you want to ask.
And we should mention this is the Ruckus Caucus on WPFW 89.3 FM Pacifica.
So, Mike, I'd like to start by just a little bit of history here. We do know that FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover did spy on Martin Luther King.
And everybody else.
And everybody else, right,
yeah,
exactly.
Come on, from
Mississippi
presidents.
Mississippi spied on civil rights.
John
Lennon,
you know.
And yet we recognize that government surveillance sometimes can stop violence. Let me start, before we get into the legalities of it all, just a little bit of history. George W. Bush is famous for expanding government surveillance.
Right.
Could you please share with our audience exactly how it was expanded and whether or not the Obama administration is continuing to do some of these things that the Bush administration started?
Sure. After the abuses that you mentioned, which were sort of the latest in a long line, starting with the history of the FBI, I mean, actually the FBI was formed in the early 1900s when there was a lot of anarchist violence to address that violence, and started with a list of radicals, you know, and they sort of targeted people because of their political beliefs, because they were immigrants, because they were otherwise suspicious, rather than
they were probably socialists.
Exactly. So, you know, that it was sort of a cycle of abuse and then reform, abuse and reform. And then in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, the abuse, when it was exposed in the early 1970s, led to the Church Committee, which investigated these abuses, not just in the FBI and the CIA and National Security Agency as well. And started to put together a charter that would limit the FBI's investigative authorities. And to sort of get in front of that, the Attorney General at the time, Edward Leavy, put together Attorney General guidelines which would limit the FBI's authority to investigate. So though that's really sort of where the rules for how the FBI can conduct investigations
And we still live under those guidelines.
And we still live under them, but they have changed many times. And in fact, they changed right after 9/11 under the Bush administration in 2002.
Now, to be clear, we're focusing on domestic surveillance of American citizens. Obviously, the government has even more power to investigate non-American citizens offshore. Right now, we're focusing on domestic surveillance. How did domestic surveillance increase after September 11th?
In every way imaginable. but the Attorney General guidelines, as I said, ended up under the Bush administration, amended six times. The latest in December of 2008, which basically all but erased the Attorney General guidelines, where now...
Really? Just a month before Barack Obama took office?
Exactly.
That was kind of a parting gift.
It was a coincidence. Yeah. Purely coincidental.
Explain to us, Mike, what is this amending of the charter? Who is doing this? Is this strictly an executive decision? How is this happening?
Because Congress did not actually follow through with the legislative charter, they are just the Attorney General's guidelines.
So Congress basically delegated to the Attorney General of the United States the power to set these guidelines?
Sort of delegated by forfeiture, by not acting on their own. They
so it's up to the Attorney General, Ashcroft or whomever is the Attorney General at the time.
Right now,
sets
the rules.
Brilliant, Congress. Thank you again.
Within the constraints of the Constitution, which is why we argue that what the current authorities are far beyond what the Constitution would allow.
Before we get to what a current Attorney General Eric Holder is doing, tell us what Attorney General Ashcroft and other attorney generals under George Bush, it was rumored, and you would know, you could confirm this more than most, that they were looking at the telephone records of at least 200 million of us. And I'd venture to say that when you look at the records of two-thirds of Americans, the vast majority of us are innocent. And I say us because I'm sure I was followed.
Let's look at that record a little more closely.
No question. You've got a whole file on you, I'm sure.
It's called a rap sheet, please.
Tell me exactly, to the extent you can, who the Bush administration was spying on and the extent of that spying.
Well, there's so many different spying programs. It depends on which direction you want to go. The Patriot Act took away a lot of the limiting regulations on Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. So these were tools that were originally developed for going after foreign spies. It was later expanded to include international terrorists. Well, now those tools can be used much easier against Americans because there's no longer a requirement that a tool like a national security letter or what they call a Section 215 order is only used against agents of foreign powers. But now they can use them against anybody relevant to an international terrorism or an espionage investigation. So
relevant to? That sounds pretty vague.
It is pretty vague. It's a very broad.
I wonder why.
What is a national security letter?
A national security letter is a written demand for information that the FBI can serve on banks and communications providers. So they can get information about your credit. They can get information from your bank. And
who
from,
you call, right? Your telephone records, your emails?
Not the content. They can just get information about
who the
subscriber to these phone numbers are, who the subscriber to these bank accounts are, that sort of thing.
So let me ask you this. How does it come about? I mean, we know that there are people who, you know, obviously they have probable cause to believe these people are involved in, you know, nefarious activities. How does it come about that every now and then we find out that just the common slob like one of us, you know, the common schlep on the street who really isn't involved in anything major, it has files on them and, you know, you look at it and you say, why this person? How does it come about that just... Joe Blow ends up with an investigative file, you know, the size of the Yellow Pages.
Have you seen our files, Mike?
Is there a common slob file for Mark and Garland?
We're all in it. Common slob. Schlep.
And the people in our audience?
I'm just checking.
Yeah. We're the common schlep file.
When I started out in the FBI, I was on the common slob unit.
I was afraid of that.
The reason why is you mentioned a standard probable cause. that standard has now been all but erased. You know, there are a couple of standards that were sort of in common practice when I was an FBI agent and doing those
investigations. You're making me pull out my Constitution.
Oh, don't do it.
It's right. Of no value.
Probably, yeah, right. Probable cause comes directly out of the Constitution.
I got a Fourth Amendment right here in front of me that says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. No warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Isn't this document supposed to bind the government?
The Constitution doesn't say anything about telephone or anything about Facebook or electronic
bank accounts. Let's get back to it. I want to find out how my file got this.
Yeah, tell us about Garland's file. What's in Garland's file?
How the common slob, namely Terry, gets the file.
So now that those standards have been reduced, where, you know, when I was working, there was the probable cause standard, obviously, for warrants. And in order to open an investigation, you needed reasonable suspicion, which, you know...
You had to believe someone had committed a crime.
You had to have articulable facts about why you had suspicions that this person was actually engaging in or would engage in.
Right.
So you could do it proactively.
Right.
If you had some factual basis for saying, you know, I know this guy isn't dealing drugs right now, but I have a factual basis to believe that he's going to be dealing drugs tomorrow or next week.
Stop pointing to me.
You know, as an agent, I found that a very effective standard as I worked and was very successful in working proactively to stop acts of terrorism before they happen. And would tell young agents I was teaching that, look, if you can't sit with a piece of paper and write down a number of facts why you think this person deserves your attention as a federal law enforcement officer, you probably should be looking at somebody else because there are a lot of bad guys out there, you know.
Yeah.
If you can't articulate a reason why you think this guy's a bad guy, you better move on to the next guy. But now that standard has been removed, where literally to open an investigation called an assessment, now the FBI needs... And this is a direct quote out of the Attorney General guidelines. No factual predicate.
No factual predicate.
Who needs facts?
Which attorney
are overrated. Wait.
This is which Attorney General?
This, Attorney General Michael Mukasey. These are the 2008 guidelines.
This is the one they did December 2008, just before.
Facts are overrated as it
office.
Is anyway. Who needs
My Constitution says
inferences. That's what I like.
Particularly describing the persons or things to be seized. That would require facts.
You would think, you know, and it, you know, it sort of surprised me as a former agent why they would want an authority that broad, because the way you said the common slob gets investigated, you know, who isn't doing anything wrong, is because once you remove a standard that requires a factual basis for suspicion, you open the door to all kinds of folly. You know, whether I start investigating somebody because I don't like the things they're saying, because I don't like the color of their skin,
their religion,
because I don't like the country they came from, you know, or because they're, you know, dating my ex-wife.
They did you wrong once.
Right. You know? There are all sorts of reasons.
Is this different, though?
They're, like, divorcing your sister in Alaska or something like that?
That was an example, a real-life example. Calm down. No ex-wives here. Please. In the past, I mean, obviously they, you know, threw away all the standards and all the rules to investigate Martin Luther King or, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King, etc. I mean, so how is that different from what they were really doing before?
It's formal now.
Have we gone back to the 50s?
Have we actually legalized what they were doing illegally?
Yeah. Absolutely, and the same sorts of abuse are happening. There was an Inspector General of the Department of Justice just released a report in September of this year, and it was an interesting sort of, you know, because part of the problem is with the abuse, it's all being done in secret. All this surveillance is being done in secret.
Of course.
So it's hard to bring the abuse to light. So the ACLU, back in 2004 and 2005, filed a bunch of Freedom of Information Act requests on behalf of a number of activist organizations, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Greenpeace, the Thomas Merton Center for Peace and Justice.
We all know peace is very dangerous.
Center for Peace and
peace
Justice.
Peace is very
that's
dangerous.
That's a threat
people
to national
who want
security.
Peace have got to be spied on because peaceful people are the worst
they're
terrorists.
Especially Greenpeace.
They're a threat, yeah.
You know, I mean, they're terrible, yeah.
If people want to protect animals, we know want to bomb buildings.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
And sure enough, in 2006... the FBI released the documents under our FOIA request, and sure enough, they were spying on all these groups.
They were.
So that started an internal investigation by the Inspector General that just in 2010, 4 years later, revealed the extent of that spying. And unfortunately, he limited the inquiry to just the cases we had already proved. So it didn't reach a lot
smart.
Of news.
That's we'll clever. Tell you what you already know.
Right, exactly.
But the average American always comes back with the argument, well, I'm not going to be doing anything wrong, so how does it affect me?
And this is exactly it. Because the standards had been lowered in 2002, what he said was, you know, yes, they investigated these people. No, there was not sufficient justification. There wasn't a sufficient factual basis that instead, but that the FBI didn't target them specifically because of their beliefs. Rather, when I talked to them, what they said was, we targeted them because there was a possibility that they might commit a federal crime in the future.
There's a possibility that anybody might commit a federal crime.
I think
you know, I might accidentally kill a seagull.
I think you need to target 2-year-old infants.
Yeah,
because all these days,
you never know.
When's our next federal crime, guys? Thursday, Friday? How far in advance?
Shh,
oh, I'm sorry.
You're not supposed to talk
about the show's over at 8. I can get one by 8:05.
Just checking.
You know how thick the book of federal crimes are, federal regulations?
I seem to recall there was a bunch of Quakers meeting in Vermont. You know, those
Quakers, peace lovers, pacifists.
And they were against the Iraq war, and they were investigated.
They could spill hot tea on somebody and burn them.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. And keep in mind, this spying is happening not just by the FBI, not just at
CIA,
the federal level.
CIA, NSA, state organizations.
Local police.
Here's the thing about it. Let me
throw something out that I know from the state of Maryland. And that is, if you know like these terrorism joint terrorism task force, et cetera, you have a mixture of federal and state agencies. When the federal government can do something and they talk about it, the state agencies think, oh, wow, okay, that's cool. In the state of Maryland, the ACLU had a big case. What happened was they found that the Maryland State Police was spying on same thing, peace agencies, animal rights agencies that have done. Organizations that had done absolutely nothing wrong.
Right.
When it was exposed, the Maryland State Police had not only spied on them, they put people on the terrorist watch list because, like, they went out to Western Maryland, protested against a bear hunt. So the Maryland State Police had to take all of these people off of terrorism watch list. So
wow.
Something makes me think they're not spying on people in the National Rifle Association. Right. The bad thing about it is now you've got these terrorism watch lists. You've got these, you know, no-fly lists.
That's true.
So not only can you get spied on, the next thing you know, I mean, you can't even get a Coke at the local 7-Eleven, for goodness sake.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. Okay, so December 08, 1 month before President Obama becomes president, George Bush eviscerates the Constitution, throws it in the toilet. That doesn't surprise me. What does surprise me, though, is did Attorney General Eric Holder leave these things in place? And if so, has nobody gone after him for that? I mean, this is our president. That's the president who's supposed to respect the Constitution. Have they not changed it since December 08?
They have not changed it since December 08. So the rules that
has
were put in place...
Has this been brought to the president's attention?
Oh, yes. We have brought it to their attention many times.
What has Attorney General...
The ACLU General, has officially.
Yes, the ACLU
has Eric Holder talked about this at all?
During his hearings when he was first nominated, he said, you know, the standards have just been put in place. You know, let me get in the chair and see how they're being implemented.
Get back to you in 8 years.
Exactly.
Get back to you in
2012. And there hasn't been another response since then. So
let's take a moment, guys, and reintroduce our guest, because this guy is
wonderful.
His name is former Special Agent Mike German. He's currently a senior policy counsel with the American Civil Liberties Union. He worked undercover for 16 years for the FBI, infiltrating white supremacist organizations. And now he's working for the ACLU and trying to tell us the government surveillance has gone a little too far.
And Let me throw something in here real quick,
and then I'll get right back. It's just a brief comment.
Very brief comment.
You notice when he said, okay, these things happened under Bush, and they continue to go to happen under President Obama. This shows something that's very important. If you allow the government to have additional power to intrude on your personal space,
they never give it up.
Never.
It's nonpartisan. It doesn't matter if it's your favorite president or the worst. Once they get it, they're never. It could be Clinton. It could be Obama. It could be God forbid Palin. It could be Terry, for God's sake.
It could be.
But the reality
luckily
is,
for us, Terry will never be president.
History tells us.
Wait, just wait.
History tells us that when the government gets power to go a little further, they're not giving it up. That's the problem with having.
Hey, I want to tell you, I lost faith in President Obama as soon as he took office, and he did not change the ruling that Bush had installed that presidential records are no longer available to the public at any time.
No president.
Not just 50 years, but at any time. We'll never know what's really going on. But, Mike, I did want to ask, just out of respect to you, if you and our listeners, how is it that you joined the FBI? Why did you leave the FBI?
Oh, yeah, there we go.
How did you get to the ACLU from the FBI? Surely the FBI didn't recommend you for the ACLU, did they? Maybe they did.
That's quite a switch, by the way. Yeah. Probably a very different culture, I would suspect, the two organizations.
Yeah. And I was telling you a story just before we came on where I saw a friend of mine from college who I knew when I was going into the FBI, and he said, you know, I never would have thought then that you'd be working for the ACLU. And I said, yeah, but I never would have thought that the United States of America would have secret prisons in Eastern Europe.
Right, yeah.
Good
but
spot.
I think the world moved around me a little bit more than I moved. But I left the FBI, as Mark said, in 2004. I had been working counterterrorism for quite a while and was, you know, as aware of anybody of the problems that were that existed in the FBI's counterterrorism program. But after 9/11, what I saw was sort of this movement away from standards that were effective, that I knew not only would not help make us safer, but would start open the opportunity for these abusive types of investigations from the past. And I thought that was going to be entirely counterproductive and violate people's rights for no security benefit. And then ultimately got involved in one case that was being mismanaged because of what was really wrong in the FBI, which is a lack of oversight and a lack of internal mechanisms that make sure that people can report problems and get them addressed early. And
by the way, I have written about this case on Alternet. You can still find that article if people want to look at it. It's about the connections between white supremacists and Islamic extremists that Mike German uncovered and the FBI covered it up. And what's fascinating about this particular case and why it boggles my mind that it hasn't gotten more media than it has is that this is a case where real live people doing real live bad things are not prosecuted because we're going after Greenpeace and we're going after
we're leaving the terrorists
alone. So
right.
Even if you only want to go after the terrorists, even if you don't give a damn about the Constitution or civil rights, we right. actually harm the fight against terrorism by focusing on people who aren't terrorists.
Right.
And that's why I found that case really shocking.
Exactly. And the mismanagement that allows for these abusive investigations that violate civil rights also allow for other kinds of folly that allow, you know,
the
important pieces of information to fall through the cracks. You know, and if you look at all these recent events where, you know, bad people, you know, all but for luck were successful in doing bad things, you know, again, the FBI had information or the intelligence community had information, and it's just because that community is so mismanaged because there isn't proper oversight. You know, it's just like in you know, all of our houses. We all have that one room in our house that when guests come over, we just close
we
the door.
Right, yeah, right.
Right?
One you know? Room? I got five rooms like
well,
that.
That room is the FBI.
When you
like
close that door, the room doesn't get cleaner.
Oh, you know? Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's the way it is with the intelligence community, you know, at the FBI as well, where, you know, what's happening behind closed doors isn't more effective and efficient.
So why isn't there more congressional oversight? I mean, I would think Bernie Sanders would be concerned about this.
Mark, you got to get rid of the word more.
Why
is there congressional oversight?
When I first studied Mike German's case, it was a Republican senator, Charles Grassley, very much looking into the FBI abuses. So there are Democrats and Republicans that do care. Where are they today? Where's Charles Grassley? Where's Bernie Sanders today?
You know, Charles Grassley still does a great job of FBI oversight. There are a number of members of Congress who do, you know, work to their best ability to try to get the information. But even, you know, the way the system is set up, they are hampered from getting that information. And they're also, in times, actively being misled. I mean, one critical thing from the Inspector General report on FBI's investigation of advocacy groups is when the ACLU Freedom of Information Act exposed documents in one particular case, the Thomas Merton Center for Peace and Justice, the FBI came out with a press release that said, you know, that document reads like, you know, the FBI just went and spied on this anti-war protest. But that's not what happened. What happened was there was this terrorism investigation, and we had reason to believe there was a real terrorist who was going to go to that rally.
This is the FBI's press release.
So that's why we were there. So, you know, don't misunderstand it. The director of the FBI testified to that regard in front of Congress.
Under oath, I presume?
Senator Leahy, you know, probably because he's been there long enough, had his suspicions and said, I want to see information about that investigation. And that started a whole new lie, because that was completely made up, the IG file.
Right. Yeah.
They completely made that up out of whole cloth.
And they said, we lost it.
And then when they discovered that it was completely made up, when Leahy said, I want to see documentation.
Good for Senator Leahy. I like him.
They then came up with another lie and said, there was a different investigation, and sort of created a new lie, different from the old lie. So it was like, you know, they're actively being misled, and yet there are no repercussions for that.
Isn't there a criminal penalty for lying to Congress? And shouldn't we throw some of these FBI agents in jail? And wouldn't that perhaps shape up the institution a little?
You know, that was actually the FBI director who lied, not agents.
I'd be happy to throw him in jail.
Right. And, you know, obviously he's staffed by a bunch of others. And so, you know, we don't
know.
Can't
blame him personally.
You know, between the agent who did the surveillance and the director testifying, we don't know who in that chain was the one who created these false statements.
But if we had an attorney general looking into it, maybe we could find
out. Exactly, because one of the things buried in a footnote in that report is that the IG asked the FBI for the emails between the people in that chain so they could determine
perfect.
Who created
who
the false statement.
Right.
The FBI would not turn over the emails.
Refused?
Refused to turn over the
emails. To Congress.
To the Inspector General.
To the Inspector General, which essentially represents Congress, right?
Well, it's actually part of the...
And they get away with this? I mean...
Here's the thing. The Attorney General basically is in charge of the FBI. He's like kind of a chief of police. He could have said to the FBI, you have to... So ultimately it comes down on the Attorney General, because if the FBI says no, the AG could say, yes, give it to him. So
now, would that really happen? I mean, really, because what you're telling us is the level of lies is so intertwined that even if the Attorney General did say, hey, guys, we really want the IG, the Inspector General, to have this information, would anything happen?
They'd had to then.
No, they'd have to.
The level of cover-up sometimes can be amazing. Mark was talking about my case. In my case, the Inspector General found that the FBI had actually used whiteout to alter one of the documents, to change the dates on the documents.
So not only are they liars, they're bad liars.
but the question came to me, you know, why would they be that coarse and you know, obvious in their attempt? And I said, because nobody will follow up.
Right.
And they said, oh, no, we are, and they put it in a report. But when Senator Grassley asked Director Mueller if they were going to, you know, have they found who altered these FBI records, he said no. And when
he said, are you going to investigate it,
they said no.
And does the Inspector General not go back to the administration and say, hey, look, we have a problem here? And
then
the administration says, we don't care?
But that was all under the Bush administration.
It's still going on.
No, I'm saying, but I'm just saying under that investigation.
Yeah.
No, there's no question.
The Inspector General actually is the same. He was actually appointed under Clinton and is actually leaving office this month, retiring.
He's had it.
So let me ask you this.
but he's been very effective. The reports are very detailed. As far as Inspector Generals goes, I think his reports.
But the executive department, the executive branch, the administration does not follow up on this. They just say, "So what?
Right.
We don't care.
Right.
We're not going to touch the FBI because we need the FBI just in case we want to use them for some other reason, like Hoover did, political advantage, maybe even."
Right.
We need to take a break. But when we come back, I want to explore the politics of this. I want to know why Attorney General Eric Holder, who by all accounts was someone who cares about civil liberties. What's he afraid of? Is he afraid of being accused of soft on terror? If you are driving, if you are listening to us at 89.3 FM...
You're being followed by the FBI right now.
And you want to come and meet this hero in person, Mike German, come on to Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street. Come on up to the back. There's still a half hour to go, and you can ask your questions of this illustrious former agent. We'll be right back.
Raucous Caucus, WPFW.
After this.
The Duke. Be at home with Duke in Washington, D.C. Be a volunteer during WPFW's winter membership drive February 3rd to the 19th. For more information or to sign up for a shift, contact Rachel Pope, volunteer coordinator, at 202-588-0999, extension 360, or email pope_rachel@wpfw.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is 89.3 FM. My name here is Mark Levine. I'm sitting with
Garland Nixon
and
Terry D. Kester.
And a very, very special guest, former FBI agent Mike German, who's currently senior policy counsel with the ACLU. We're talking about government surveillance, what's legal, what's not, what the administration, even the current Obama administration, is doing, still doing. And the sad truth is what Agent German is telling us is that there's virtually no standards left. And they're spying on everybody. So it's not a very happy story, but it's certainly one that we need to know. If you want to come down to Ben's Next Door, 1213 U Street, and ask a question of our guest, there's still time to do so. And let's go right now to some people we have in the audience. The first one, her name is Justice. I joked maybe she's the Department of Justice. But actually, it's a very appropriate name for this. Go ahead and ask your question, Justice.
Hi, I'm Justice Journalist.
Speak into the microphone.
Hi, I'm the Justice Journalist. I have a radio program on Blog Talk Radio. It's called For Justice Radio. And I am very concerned about this issue. I'd like to know, you said the IG is leaving.
Right.
Inspector General.
The IG does investigations when people have complained and maybe somebody within the bureau organization hasn't done what they're supposed to do. How do you get in touch with the IG? Because I've tried, and it seems that the complaint has been misdirected, so to speak.
Great question. How should any individual who feels that they are the target of improper surveillance, what rights do they have?
Well, it's very difficult because first, you know, what we've found when we've brought suits on this issue is first you have to prove that you're surveilled, and when the investigation is being done in secret,
That
proof is very difficult. The Inspector General does have a website, and there is a process on the website for making complaints. I don't have the URL right in front of me, but if you Google Department of Justice Inspector General, you can come to his website and do that. But you know,
what if you file a complaint and you don't hear anything back for 6 months?
That was my own experience, even within the FBI, that it was very hard to get their attention and to get them to start an investigation. When I first brought my complaint about this case that I mentioned to the Inspector General was in December of 2002. They opened an investigation in January of 2004.
Speedy justice.
That was pretty quick.
I know enough about Mike German's case. The way he got results was he went through Congress.
Right.
That basically he got stymied by the FBI, and he went, and actually, in his case, Senator Grassley helped him, who's a Republican. But you could go, if you have a case, go to Eleanor Holmes Norton. Do you live in the district? You live in Virginia. Well, I don't know who your member of Congress is. They won't do anything either. There's two senators. Maybe one of them will do something. But sometimes, unfortunately, if you can't get a result through the IG the way you should, the Inspector General's office, you got to go to your member of Congress and ask them.
But you were saying, Mike, that this Inspector General that's leaving has been pretty good on following up. Do we have, as citizens, any political input in any way in the selection of the next Inspector General? Are we going to get a real FBI tool in there?
How do we get involved
in that process? Because obviously it's important.
Right. It is a presidential appointment with Senate confirmation. Not all IGs have Senate confirmation, but I believe the DOJ inspector general does. So, you know, there'll certainly be an opportunity to express yourself, but...
Maybe in those hearings, the issues that you raise can be brought to light. I mean, this is something that very few Americans know about.
Right. I
suspect most people listening to this show have heard this for the first time. You're a very respected witness. And that's the other thing. People say all kinds of conspiracy theories on the radio. You don't need those. This is real government surveillance. Should citizens attend this hearing? Should they? Are there going to be panels to speak out about it?
Well, you know, it will go through a Senate confirmation process, so there will be a hearing out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But you
Senator
know,
Leahy's still the head of that committee?
Senator Leahy is still the chairman of that committee. And, you know, so that's an opportunity, certainly. But, you know, even if you want to go to your House member, you know, and let them know your concerns, sometimes they can bring them over to the Senate or... use their, you know.
Would you go so far, Mike, to say that the FBI is essentially a rogue agency at this point?
Certainly elements of it are rogue. You know, I mean, I still have a lot of confidence that most FBI agents try to do the right thing and operate within the law. But the problem is there isn't anybody restraining them internally anymore or really externally.
It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable for our president, too. I mean, it truly is. I mean, you know, one ought to at least... I know it's going to get lost in the stacks, but one ought to write the President of the United States and say, look, damn it, you're not even beginning
well,
to
you
do
know,
your
one
job.
Of the things
maybe it'll be one of those 10 letters he reads.
Yeah. One of the things about government power, we were talking earlier about no matter, it's nonpartisan. The more power you give government, they're going to hold on to it. They're not going to let go when they get in that position. It's human nature. If you have a significant other and somebody gives you the password to their email address, you're going to be tempted to their email. You're going to be tempted to use it. You're going to,
but
you're
going
to be tempted to use it, whether you use it or not.
Yep.
If you don't have it, you won't be tempted. The nature of people, if you give them a little bit, they're going to be tempted to use it. That's why it's important not to give them this power to curb this, because a Democratic president comes up and they say, well, you know, we can close all your records and we can do this and all that. And he's going to scratch his head and say, that I'm in that position, that sounds pretty good.
So we've got
to stop that from happening.
And, you know, everybody knows that when somebody is checking your work and looking over your shoulder...
You're more careful.
You're more careful.
Right.
You know, you make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. When nobody's looking over your shoulder, and you know nobody's going to be reviewing your work...
And you know that the rogue agents are getting away with basically anything they want to do, that does not encourage discipline...
Right.
In the rest of the agents.
We have another question from someone in our audience. If you'll give us your first name, I don't care whether you tell us your real first name or not.
Yeah.
All right. But go ahead.
Good evening. My name is Donald Duck.
Donald Duck. Hello, Donald.
Hey, Donald. Glad to have you here.
Me and my friend were actually talking about this question. It's a very general question, but it's about social media and how people are really right now becoming very opinionated, and there's different ways people can find out the truth. Now, how is the FBI, I guess, fighting against this? Because they obviously have some sort of censorship or something. So how does the FBI work through these social mediums, like social networks or
YouTube? You mean like Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah.
So you
want to
know if the FBI is spying on your Facebook site?
Well, I want to know how they do it.
Like, how they do it? They probably just read it if you post it, right?
But there's millions of people, though. Like,
that's true.
There must be a way to single certain people out that are willing to do more than other people.
How do they know which Facebook site to read?
Well, you know, that gets back to those standards. You know, when you needed a reasonable factual basis, you know, you would have to say, okay, you know, who do we have a factual basis to believe is doing something wrong and why? You know, it might be one of your Facebook friends who said, hey, you know, Donald Duck is writing some really crazy stuff and, you know, I think he's doing something dangerous and, you know, he's showing photographs of this nuclear bomb he says he has.
And in some
that
cases,
would be okay
let me
with
just
me.
Add
That's
this.
An articulable
And in
fact.
Some cases, as we found out here recently, that needs to be reported.
Well, exactly.
But there are cases where
that
needs to be.
Right.
But more importantly than that, we know from the history of, you know, America throughout history and the cities and Chicago and New York, all these cities, there's so often, and particularly when it comes to minorities or anybody else, there's so often that the police, the investigators, whoever, need to arrest somebody.
Sure.
They need to punish somebody.
Right.
Especially if there's any political pressure. What pressure? What's to prevent the FBI, or is the FBI just saying, well, let's just pick Donald Duck. He's available, and put the crime on him. And then we can lie about it, as you've already indicated, Mike. We'll lie about it when it's investigated. And we'll say, oh, yeah, we had all these good reasons. We're just not giving you a copy of the reasons that we had. What's to prevent the FBI from picking any American citizen and saying, you're it?
Well, that is a real problem with the FISA warrants, because now that the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court Act, which used to be used against agents of foreign powers under the Patriot Act, can now be used against people.
Anybody.
You know, it's been broadened that, you know, it used to be when you were arrested and evidence was seized from you in a search or a wiretap, you could look at that affidavit that got the judge to sign the warrant, and if there were bad facts in it, you could challenge them. Well, when it was a FISA warrant, you can't see the affidavit.
Because it's a secret court.
Because it's all classified material. But, so it's a lot harder to challenge and to see whether they were making stuff
so
up.
So they can literally put the crime on me, you, Mark Garland, and there's really no way we could, if they decided to do that, if a rogue agent who's now no longer supervised wanted to do this in the FBI, they could dump any crime, any accusation on any one of us, and there's really very little we could do about it.
Well, eventually you'd have to have a trial by jury before they'd actually put you in jail.
Yeah, but we got the FBI testifying.
Here's one thing about the warrants that we're talking about that has changed in many cases. Normally, law enforcement has to bring a warrant before an officer of the court. They review it, and they can make a decision. Well, no, you don't have enough facts in this warrant.
There are many. Ideal.
Right.
Ideal.
There are many circumstances now where all they can do is review the warrant and sign off on it. They can't say no.
They have to rubber stamp it? Is that right?
I'm not sure. In the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, with the amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, they sign what's called what we call a basket warrant. So it no longer, you know, what was in the Fourth Amendment.
No longer has articulable suspicion, which is exactly what's
right,
in the
Right, and it's based on individual suspicion, where now they're saying, no,
I suspect that one of 300 million Americans has done something wrong. Right, let's just spy on everybody.
All the court is doing is saying that the program of surveillance is directed at people overseas. The fact that it's actually collecting information on Americans isn't something
Mike,
that comes
I
into
seem to
it.
Recall,
so it's exactly right that they're no longer looking for that individual
suspicion. We're after Osama bin Laden, but we're going to start with Mark.
Correct me if I'm wrong. As I seem to recall, the chief judge of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court under George Bush actually complained and shut the whole thing down until they found some way to go around her, and I think it was a her. Is that right?
That is correct. And, you know, one interesting thing, because the inspector general also looked at that program, and Congress was sort of cajoled into passing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Amendments that would have broadened
it. So in other words, when the judge of his own secret court that never speaks says they're doing something wrong, Congress jumped and made sure that they could continue to do things wrong.
But again, did not have good information about what was going on. And what the IG said is that the law they passed was actually broader than what they were doing.
Oh, wow.
Anthony.
Not good.
We have another person in the audience.
This is Mickey Mouse.
Anthony couldn't
excuse
make
me.
It. Right.
Excuse me,
this
Mickey.
Is Anthony, AnthonyTalks.com.
It's probably years.
Well, yeah, you guys need a more regular schedule. Nevertheless, it's concerning me that the word terrorism has become a license to kill, a license to do anything. And the moment, you know, our authorities label something as a terrorist act or having terrorist influence, it becomes, you know, their ability to do just about anything and get all the attention and the money and the resources that they can possibly get to pursue this particular mean. But on the other hand, it's also interesting to me how certain events are labeled terrorist and other events are not labeled terrorist, particularly that if you are Arab or male or Muslim or brown-skinned or whatever, the likelihood of your situation being labeled terrorist is particularly high. And when you're not,
Jared Loughner wasn't
low.
Called a terrorist very
well,
often.
Mentally ill person. Not only that, when these acts or potential acts are planned on certain communities, for example, the backpack bomb in Washington State. You know, now, yeah, it was a failed act, thank God, but on the other hand, why was that not a terrorist attack? So it's just very interesting to me, and from my view, very politicized about how certain events are considered to be terrorist acts or considered to be failed terrorist acts, and others aren't. And it seems to be directly related to the ethnicities and the religious backgrounds of the people who are who are doing the attacks.
Are there standards
you really bring up
about how
big,
to label it?
A big question, because what you're asking is the FBI now also, besides its illegality, its irresponsibility, is it politicized?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. And there's an IG report that went into the fact that the Department of Justice was politicized. It didn't go further down. Of course, the FBI is a component of the Department of Justice, but I think it is. And you know, that's sort of a good example of what gets called terrorism and what doesn't, and also what is put up as a priority. I think it was about 2004, 2005, where the FBI said the domestic terrorism priority was animal rights and environmental rights.
And not
terrorists.
The militias out in the
North. No, that wouldn't hurt anyone. Right.
Let me ask you this. You worked infiltrating white supremacist organizations and did some really great work doing that. How are we doing on that score? Are we still infiltrating white supremacist organizations? I hope so.
Actually, there was recently a case, I believe it was in Idaho, it might have been in Washington State, where a gentleman was arrested. I think it was an ATF undercover operation, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And this was a person who was actually making bombs and actually dealing in illegal firearms.
I wouldn't call him gentleman, but go ahead.
The government was not making
suspect
bombs and giving them to him. This was a person who was actually making bombs, and yet there wasn't the, you know, elaborate theatrical production that
right.
we've seen in these
we didn't
other
call
cases.
Them
it wasn't
terrorist.
The underwear bomb
where,
guy
where
or something.
Right, where we're selling, you know, where the government is selling him a Stinger missile, right. you know, and then saying, oh, look at this, you know,
person who bought
person, you know, this was obviously somebody who was breaking the law, and yet I'm sure most of you have never heard of that case.
So who
you know,
decides?
Similarly with the bomb in Idaho.
Was this the director of the FBI?
You know, why didn't that bombing get the attention that the Times Square
right, where
the
guy had like a pack of matches and, you know, some, you know,
right, exactly.
something that wouldn't blow
no,
up.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, who decides that? Is that the director of the... Who's the it's not Mueller anymore, is it?
Yes.
He's still director of the FBI?
He'll be director. His term expires in September of 2011.
Has there been a period, I mean, from what you're saying, has there been a period ever in the history of the FBI when it truly did serve the ideals, the dreams, the laws, the confidence of the American people?
I think there was a couple hours in 1986.
Was that
between
was that
8 and 11 p.m. on January the 12th.
It was when I was there.
That's right. Of course.
I'm sorry.
They kicked the one
left, it all went out,
out
the door. Yeah.
You know, I will say that there was a market change after 9/11. That you know, I was very dismayed because I grew up wanting to be an FBI agent and studied all that history and thought
there was a time when it was considered honorable.
And thought how lucky I was that I was joining the FBI when those lessons had been learned. That we didn't want to go on these politically motivated investigations. That we didn't want
go
to target
tell
people
pro.
Without facts that they're actually engaged in misconduct. And you know, I think the people that I worked with were very cognizant of those First Amendment rights. You know, there during that time period in the 1980s, there was also the CISPIS investigation, the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, which was an abusive investigation. So, you know, there are always abuses going on. You know, the FBI is made up of individuals, and individuals make bad choices.
And with the fear and the panic and the hysteria spread by our government after 9/11, I assume, was there a heck of a lot of... It seems the FBI actually resisted for a while. I mean, and even has resisted, like, in terms of Guantanamo. But it seems that there's always this pressure, this political pressure on the FBI to go get somebody.
You know, and keep in mind, the FBI is not a monolith. It's
right.
individuals.
Yeah, right.
You know?
I understand.
So, yeah, I mean, I always hear from, when I go out into the country, that communities... leaders will tell me, you know, it was really good for a couple of years, then it was really bad, then it was really good again, and now it's really bad again. What's happening? Why does this keep changing? And it's because, you know, the person in charge there changes. You know, that a new guy comes in and he has a good attitude and wants to work with the community, things go well. The next guy comes in and he has a bad attitude, doesn't want to deal with the community, things don't go well.
We have another person in our audience ask a question. You can give us the first name.
We've had Donald Duck.
Real or fake, but ask, go ahead and ask your question.
All right, my name is Jonah, and my question is, it sounds like overall, your opinion would be that things are getting worse and worse with the FBI. Do you think that the most basic cause of that would be just mistakes that people are making due to ignorance or just... just mistakes, or do you think there is like somebody who's who's profiting from this, who is intending for things to go in this direction where the government's getting more power?
Good question.
Very good question.
You know, having worked 16 years in government, if you have to err between conspiracy or incompetence, I'd err towards incompetence. And I think a lot of it is that there's, you know, a lack of appropriate supervision, a lack of oversight, a sort of institutional desire to hide the problems rather than uncover and address them. So the problems just multiply rather than getting corrected. And nobody's held responsible.
And let me throw something else in. You know, like Martin Luther King used to always say, apathy. The people who sit around, there's so many people that sit around and just kind of ignore it and don't do anything. But something interesting that Terry said that's very true. You ask the average person out there. I know when I was with the ACLU, there were a lot of like polls done regarding the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights polled very low.
Yeah, right.
Oddly enough, and here's something I learned because I spent 27 years in law enforcement. You ask the average person on the street, and they'll say, "Well, I don't have anything to hide. I don't care if the police. Why shouldn't they be able to? And they can look at my house until you serve a search warrant on them." Right? They don't care. It doesn't matter as long as someone else's house.
They're happy that the police abuse someone else as long as it's
That's it. They have nothing to hide. But when you show up at their house with a search warrant, they hit the ceiling. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. Well, I'm sorry your son was, you know, implicated in, you know, selling 5,000 pounds of cocaine. Well, don't come in here. So one of the big problems is so many people, I would even say most people take the attitude, it doesn't matter, it's not me. They ignore their rights, they ignore the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. But when they need it, they want it. Yep. And that's what's so sad about most people. They don't see the big picture. They
first
don't
they
think
came,
I'll
first they
ever
came
be.
For the Jew, but it wasn't me. First they came for the priest, but it wasn't me. Right. First it came for
because
the
most people, the other thing, most people that are comfortable, you know, when they think of the police abuse or law enforcement abuse, they think of people.
They think not me.
They think of poor people of color. They think of people who, it's not going to be me. It's going to be those people over there who are going to get arrested, investigated, searched, etc. But when it hits home, then they're unhappy with it.
And I think that there are two key things to remember about that, if that's where your mindset is. And one is that the information they have about you might not be correct. One of the victims of the Maryland spying operation was talking to me, and she had been a Vietnam War era protester. And she said, you know, it really didn't surprise her so much that she was being surveilled because she had that experience. But what shocked and frightened her was that when she finally got her file from the Maryland State Police, the information they had was wrong. They had her associated with the wrong groups. They had her at protests she wasn't at. And that scared her because she thought, oh, my gosh, it's a mistake that could get you put in jeopardy. You know, that the police make a mistake because there's no way to correct it.
A mistake. If you need a little more probable cause, you might want to sprinkle it in some place that they weren't.
Are we at that point, besides mistakes, that if I call the FBI and say, geez, my friend Mark, you know, I used to like him, but I think now he's getting a little out of hand and he's maybe connected.
I'll turn you in, Terry. You turn me in, I'll turn you in.
Yeah, but I mean, are we at that point where if I were to do that?
It's actually worse than that.
That excites a lot, Mark.
They're actively going out and creating what they're calling suspicious activity reporting programs where they're encouraging the public to report on their neighbors.
Over the Beltway. Oh, you ride around 495 and you see 1-800-495. See it, say it. You see it, report it.
I thought Germany didn't exist anymore.
I think I saw a picture of Terry on one of the signs.
I hear jack boots in the distance.
So you're supposed to inform on your neighbor.
And the behaviors they say.
Or family members.
A lot of these programs, and state police, local police have them. The FBI has one. The Director of National Intelligence has one. The DHS has one. And they all have different behaviors, but they essentially come down to some that are on all of them. One suspicious behavior that needs to be reported is photography.
Oh, no. Taking pictures.
Another is taking notes.
I seem to recall somebody was taking a picture of the various national monuments for some book.
I'm going to turn in all the students in my Monday, Wednesday, Friday class.
Exactly.
They take notes.
Drawing diagrams, taking measurements.
I'm guilty.
Believe it or not, had espousing extreme views.
We're doomed, guys. So, that's it.
Rush Limbaugh's a goner.
I know Limbaugh's
out of here.
Right. Tell us about the files on the three of us, Mike. No, I'm only half joking. What files exist for individuals in America? Is there a file?
You might
on
have
it?
A file.
Can I check it?
There will there be after tonight, Charlie.
I can find out what's in it. I don't know that I've done anything wrong. Seriously, can a citizen say I want to see my file?
Well, that presupposes that there's a file.
Well,
I don't know. The way data is kept today, they don't need a file. There can be no file on Mike German, but if a police department calls up and says, FBI, what can you tell me about Mike German? What they can do is look in all their different data repositories, you know, including their investigative data warehouse that has 1.5 billion with a B records.
So in other words, we all do have a file on us.
Not
somewhere.
Only that, they can go to commercial
credit agencies,
right? Credit agencies, telephone companies,
data aggregators that do all that for them. Yeah. So there's a tremendous amount of information because we live in a digital age that's available.
And should I assume
that they can, you know, with a mouse click, put that dossier together? But when you come in and say, I'd like to see my file, there is no file.
And should I assume that since I was arrested during the Vietnam era for protesting, should I assume that that file is just going on and getting fatter and fatter?
Well, the FBI says that they don't get rid of any information. So
good.
But we only have a few minutes left, and I have one more question from the audience. Go ahead.
Hey. Hello. Former agent German. Okay, number one, same question that a lot of us have about ex-military. I love what you're doing now. Is there any hope? Well, I'm going to lay a bunch of stuff out there.
Wait, not much time. Real
quick. Is there any hope that people will catch some of your spirit, people who are in it already? This happens to a lot of military guys green out after they get out. You've come over to the side of right and truth, but you're out of it now. And number two, is there any possibility that some of the old right-wing stuff that fed the COINTELPRO and kind of thing, are those people all gone yet? Or are they still around to make mischief? Or even is there a chance that any of them would distract Holder and Company from doing what they rightfully
have?
We're
running out of time, so let me let Mike answer your questions. Go ahead.
Yes, you know, I think that there's a problem and, you know, that there isn't enough being done. Actually, the FBI now has a racial and ethnic mapping program where they're conducting demographics and gathering information based on race.
But do the good, honest people leave like yourself? I mean, I think that's the heart of the
question. That's even worse.
The bad apples stay and the good apples leave?
You know, unfortunately, the FBI retaliates severely against internal whistleblowers, so it sort of quelches any dissent, and it's very difficult for FBI agents, even after they leave, to talk. You know, there's a culture of not talking bad about the FBI once you've left, so it's very difficult, but you know, there are a number of agents out there, former agents out there speaking, so I hope that there will be more.
And the real question we have to ask before we run out of time, you know, obviously we're going to have to broadcast the Raucous Caucus from a jail cell. Our general manager here, John Hughes, is here tonight. Thank you so much for coming.
You,
our new general manager, welcome to WPFW. And look, can we do the show from the jail cell? Will you support us with that?
Can we do a remote from Guantanamo Bay?
Yeah, if necessary.
We may have to. Mike, real quick, what can someone listening who's horrified, as I think anyone probably is, what can they do to help rectify the situation? Call their members of Congress? Is that the best way?
Absolutely, that's the best way. Call your members of Congress. Let them know you're concerned about these issues writ large. You know, you can go to the ACLU Spy Files website. It's www.aclu.org/spyfiles that has a lot of the information that you can then bring to your congressman and say, I want
this
addressed.
Repeat that one more time.
www.aclu.org/spyfiles.
And if you forget any of this, contact any one of us. We are in contact with Mike German, Garland Nixon, and Terry Kester and Mark Levine. You could go on our Facebook page and get us through WPFW. This is an issue that none of us should forget.
Amen.
Because just because it started under Bush doesn't mean it's not continuing under Obama. And when it comes to one person's freedom, it affects all of our freedoms. So, Mike German, I got to thank you for all you've done. Let's
Amen.
All give Ditto. A hand.
Ditto. Ditto. Hand.
For all the work he continues to do. And may you go forth and continue to do justice. This has been the Raucous Caucus at 9.3 FM. Next week we are in studio.
We are.
And then we'll be back here at Ben's the week thereafter.
The week thereafter, we're scheduled.
Keep coming to visit us. Keep asking your questions. We love to have you here. Again, Mike German, from Mark Levine, Terry Kester, and Garland Nixon, from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks for having me. Great, thank you.